I'm not even going to do the intro. We're just going to go straight into the show because I'm really fucking pumped up right now. So let's identify ourselves first. We've got the bitch of Westeros.
Hello. Emma. I'm back. It's been a long time.
Yeah. We actually really have to physically be in the same space to podcast now.
I think you and I have only been in the same place to podcast once before. And that was when we did our first podcast together back in like 2016.
Was it?
Yeah. At your place.
Jesus Christ.
Your old place. Well, no, it wasn't your place. Was it John's place?
I don't fucking know. Probably. Yeah.
It was ages ago, though. It was just after my high school reunion.
Oh, yeah. No one gives a shit. and we've got two other guests here as well. Please identify yourselves.
Liz Best, a.k.a. the Mad Queen. Sir Sass.
And we're here to discuss episode 2, season 8 of Game of Thrones, which was called, with a K, fuck, what was it? A night of the Seven Kingdoms.
A Night of the Seven Kingdoms.
Yeah, so let's see. I want to get reactions first because we were all in the same room and reacting pretty heavily. Emma, we'll start with you. What's your reaction? Like your immediate take? We watched it 10 minutes ago.
Look, it was just
hold the mic to your mouth. What are you doing?
It was like every Lord of the Rings movie before a battle as well.
Yeah.
Do you know when like everyone's fucking each other? Everyone's like. No, everyone's singing. Everyone's getting drunk together and talking about how they're all going to die. Like, it was very, there's a lot of suspense because you knew almost immediately in that episode that, like, we weren't going to get even a touch of the battle.
Yeah.
It was just going to be the suspense in the lead up to the battle.
Yeah. Did you find that effective?
Yeah. Yes and no. I think it was a slow episode because you're like, oh my God, what's going to happen in this battle? Like you just, everyone's fanging for that Battle of Winterfell. Like
yeah.
We know that's going to happen. And so like the suspense is like killing me and I'm sure it's killing everyone else. So to have to wait another week to see any ounce of that battle is like excruciating.
Yeah, yeah.
But we saw a lot of things happen this episode that were like super fun and like I think some of them were probably a bit fan servicing.
Yeah,
like
it did feel like that.
Some, yeah, there were a couple of things where we were like, okay, all right, you're just trying to like win us over because you keep killing off everyone we love and you're probably about to kill off more of them. So
yeah
it was still it was a feel-good episode.
It felt like they were trying to give us the happy moments because they know that shit's about to go down. And I, for one, am already really fucking stressed about next week.
Yeah.
Like, it's super fucking stressed. I was halfway through the episode saying, guys, next week, what the fuck?
And then they just kept talking about the crypts as well.
Yeah.
Which, like, oh, man. It's obvious, like, I mean, how much...
Dead people are in the crypts and they bring people to life.
Yeah. I mean, how much speculation has there been in the past about the White Walkers possibly coming into Winterfell via the crypts.
And they make a point in the opening sequence of laying out the entire crypts with those little Scrabble tiles.
Yes, yeah. So I think that's definitely going to happen. And they've put all their loved ones down there.
All the kids. Like, they're going to have an army of fucking
children
whites.
Yeah,
like,
that's kind of
terrifying. Terrifying. Upsetting. Like, we thought that the fucking Lord of Umber getting it last week was terrifying. Oh, no. You just wait.
Fucking kids arts and crafts on the wall with that poor little kid.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, so I mean, well, they set up that with the child that goes up to Davos when he's serving out the food to the soldiers, which is kind of like, I guess, like you said, there's a lot of fan service in the episode, which I'm actually, normally I'm against that sort of stuff, but like I felt absolutely fine with it because there's just a lot of moments that were just so satisfying. Sarah can attest to this.
I felt very satisfied with the fan service of Arya and Gendry.
Yeah. Was that your favorite moment of the episode?
Yes.
Yeah?
I have been, like, the moment where she first saw Gendry last episode, I was screaming, and this time I hit Nick really hard as soon as I saw where that was going. I was dying and could not come down from that hype into the next scene with Brienne for a little while. So I probably would have cried at the Brienne thing if I had not just been like...
Yeah, completely taken aback. Because it feels kind of shocking. Like, I know that they kind of set it up last week with their little sort of give and go between them where it was like reminding us that they had a relationship. But like pushing it that far shows to me like how much Arya's grown as a character.
I kind of did not picture her as a sexual being. I thought she was almost a little bit like Bran, just like completely removed from it.
Yeah.
And then I was watching this interview with Maisie Williams, I think like the behind the scenes thing where she was talking about the moment where she sees Gendry again for the first time and she was saying that her motivation behind the character was like, you know, she's seeing this boy that she used to love. And I was like, she used to love him? Like, I thought they were just besties. And so that kind of threw me because I was like, no, I totally pictured them as platonic. I wanted them to be something more, but because the age gap seemed so big when she was so small. This is my issue.
It seemed like she was a child meeting an adult, but in reality, we did some research, and when they met, she was 10 and he was 15, and she's 18 now, everybody.
Yeah.
She's 18, so this is like totes fine.
Yeah.
I'm sure they didn't have like sex age laws back in fucking Westeros.
No, probably not if they were married. It's still,
it just, when I was thinking about it, and everyone's like, oh my God, Arya and Gendry have to get together. I was like, do they though? She's a fucking child. But she's not. She just looks young. She just looks young. But it just, it, the age gap seems so vast when they met. Yeah. That was my moment.
That's because she was still, like, she still had those massive eyes that she was just using all the time as like a sad puppy.
To be honest, like with the fact that they've got her all armored up and stuff, you haven't even noticed that she's become a woman. She's gone from a kid to a girl pretending to be a boy to a fucking fighting machine. Yeah. Like there's no...
That nude scene was a bit like... Well, not nude scene, but like seeing her even vaguely naked was like a little bit confronting because you're like, holy shit, she's a woman.
Yeah.
She's a woman. Like we all forgot. She has boobs.
Yeah, she's so feminine. Under all that armor and she's talking feminine, weapons. Yeah. That's her talking dirty is talking weapons.
And like, I think as well, like this is probably the first time now that she's back in Westeros and she's back in Winterfell and she's totally coming into her own. Even when she was training in Braavos and she was becoming one of the Faceless Men, there were so many moments there where she was completely unsure of whether or not she would survive.
Yeah.
So this is like, we've seen her grow and we've seen her character develop through all of the trials that she's had, but it has been, it's still quite a shock to turn around and realize actually she's totally comfortable here. Like she's fine. She's
and
in
taking
her,
charge.
Yeah. She's in her element. She's taking charge. She's not reacting anymore. She's,
I just She's love that, you forward. Know, I'm not the Red Woman. You're going to have to take your own pants off.
I also think, like, her scenes with Gendry and her confidence in the last couple of episodes is going to play really nicely into that being completely undone the moment, like, the Night King and everyone sort of stamp their way in, which is obviously next week. Because, like, she's showing off pretty much. Like, she has that moment with Gendry where she's just like, you know, I know you want to fight. And she's just like, oh, yeah, bitch. And then she fucking, you know, like, bullseyes, like, three dragon stone fucking things.
I think it's a good way to remind everyone that these characters are like, human. Mm. Especially characters like Arya, who, you know, I mean, with the exception of Bran, who's the three-eyed raven. Arya, like, you know, she's a bit of a weapon when it comes to, like, fighting and like... She's grown up so much that she's always like a spunky little kid, but she's like way past that now. And like, you're right. Like, I can't remember which one of you said it was like hard to like see that she was actually still, you know, that she's not like that there is a woman under all that armor and stuff like that.
She's not just a warrior or a fighter.
Yeah, she's just a warrior. And now she's like, she loves a boy and she's scared.
She's just
and
a girl
she's
standing
just
standing in front of a boy like, and asking him to fuck her.
I was going to take his own bit. yeah, so I think it's like a nice reminder before George Martin kills everyone we love that they're all still human and that we do still love them and they are going to die.
But I think it's also a testament just to how, I guess, like, incredibly in-depth some of the relationships have been. Like, Arya and Gendry hadn't seen each other for so long, but it was like when the moment last week and then this week, like, that sort of interplay just reminds us of how, like, strong their bond was back in the early days of the show, which is
and that they've
so
all,
fucking sad.
And that they've all been through a lot together. I mean, not just Arya and Gendry, but, like, that whole circle of people that were talking about the battles they've gotten through.
Yeah.
I have to say, like, Arya and Gendry was, like, I still get really emotional whenever I'm rewatching it. And that moment where she's like, I can be your family. And she's tearing up. That still, like, is probably one of the moments in the earlier season that just rips my heart out.
Yep.
Like, Ned Stark getting beheaded, okay? But Arya being like, I can be your family. That.
I don't even remember that.
How
do you not remember that?
What happened?
So she was going to go off and she was going to, I think, find, she was going to go to Winterfell or she was going to go to River Run or wherever she was going to go. And she was like, Gendry, come with me. And he was like, no, I'm going to join the Brotherhood. This is a chance for me. Like, I've never had this kind of bond before. This is a chance for me to have a family. And she was just like, right. I can be your family. And he's like, no, you would be m'lady. Because it was still that element of, like, she's a noble.
He's a highborn. Yeah,
he's just a pauper and all that sort of stuff. And so that was, like, a really sad scene. But then in the next scene, that was when Melisandre rocked up and was like, I'm going to take him and I'm going to put leeches on his dick.
Yeah, so cool.
At which point he finds out he is, you know, the son of a king. Yeah. So he's not all that far off.
No, he's half highborn.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
He's like, yeah.
I wonder if that helps his, like, helps that the bridging of that gap between him and her, if he feels a bit more comfortable around her now that he can say he's Robert Baratheon's son. Like.
Can we talk a little bit about Arya's weapon and about her mad fucking targeting skills with knife throwing?
Yeah.
And about how I reckon she could rival the Night King for the gold medal in Olympic javelin coming up 100%. With the fucking ice dragon.
I hope she gets a dragon.
She fucking has to, right? It. They wouldn't show us they how fucking give, good she is at target practice and marksmanship give her a fucking... Because when she drew the picture of the weapon she wanted, I thought it was going to be a lot more fancy than a fucking bit of dragon glass and what looks like a bamboo pole.
But it's just, it's pretty similar to what the Night King had.
Yeah,
which
is
just like a long piece of...
But with dragon glass.
Sharpness on a stick. So, sharpness on a stick.
Sharpness on a stick.
Oh, So, but I think, it's there's got to be some sort of, like, poetic mirroring going on there.
Yeah.
But, like, she's going to be the one who takes down a dragon. Because
she was
the
most excited to see the dragons when they came over Winterfell last week. So.
Yeah.
I want to talk about Jamie. Because this feels like the whole episode, in my review last week, I mentioned that, like, the episode was very Arya-focused. She was going around reminding us all that she'd been in this relationship, but this felt very much like Jaime's turn to remind everyone how involved he's been in the universe, considering.
Yes.
And I felt this might have been some of the strongest stuff that Jaime's had over the last couple of years, considering he's, like, one of my favourite characters.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know where to start, because, I felt so tense during his, like quasi-trial at the start of the episode when he's basically getting grilled by, everyone as to why he's the only Lannister here. But I kind of want... Liz, I'm actually curious how you felt about just his presence in general and also, I guess, like, his relationship with Brienne as we kind of reminded about it throughout the episode.
Look, I've always been a big fan of the Brienne-Jaime relationship because I think a large part of who Jaime is because of Brienne now. Especially, like, she was the one who got him to leave Cersei by going, fuck loyalty, at the end of the last season. And I think I like the fact that he's being made to answer for the person that he used to be but that people aren't jamming it down his throat, you know. And I really love the fact that, you know, all that shit that he did to try and save Brienne and was like, oh, whatever, what about it? Now it's finally coming back to help him and help other people trust him. And the moment when she stood up and said that she would trust him with her life, I was like, yes, queen.
I think, it was nice to see. It was nice to see for a second Sansa and Dany, you know, have the same opinion on something.
About to agree on something.
They're about to agree on something. But I think it also just shows the difference in how those two women handle things. First of all, Dany just cannot trust anyone. She does not trust anyone.
She's been fucked over so many times, though, to be fair.
But so has Sansa.
It's true.
Like, they've both been fucked over.
Has Dany had people, I guess, other than her armies, has she had anyone willing to lay down their life?
Drogo?
Yeah.
Jorah?
Dario as well.
Dario?
But Jorah, was that the same kind of loyalty that Sansa has had in terms of people saving her, or I don't know.
I don't think so, because Dany has always felt like she's a little bit more in control. She's always been, it's always been like, I'm the queen, you're serving me. Whereas when Sansa accepted Brienne as being sworn to her, Sansa was very, very fucking vulnerable. Like, she was just escaped. She had just escaped from Ramsay. She was completely grimy. She thought she was about to die and all that sort of stuff. And someone had still come after her, even though she had rejected them. And she, in that moment, I think it was more, you know, someone wants to take care of me. It wasn't necessarily like this person is going to do this because I could give them something. Because at that moment, Sansa didn't have Winterfell. She didn't have an army or anything like that. She wasn't like, even with Dany, when she met Jorah, she was marrying Drogo. She was marrying someone powerful, and there was this expectation that she would go to the Seven Kingdoms and she would, you know, become this amazing person, or she would be a very powerful Khaleesi. There was always someone there who was kind of sitting there going, you know, she's powerful, I can be an ally to her. Whereas with Sansa, she had nothing.
Yeah, like, there always seems to have been a reason for someone to lay down their life or sword or whatever for Daenerys. And ever since Drogo died, I don't really think that she's, even when she's been in peril, she still hasn't seemed vulnerable.
Yeah, because she's had her dragons as well, because she's always been like, I'm the mother of dragons. She was never nothing. I think she said that in one of the things. She's like, I have never been nothing. And but in that moment when Brienne swore to Sansa, Sansa was nothing. Like, her home had been taken. Her dignity had been
there
taken.
There could be no other ulterior motive. There's no alliance there. There's just empathy and wanting to help somebody.
And Brienne didn't come with an army. Brienne didn't come with an army that was like, I'm going to take back Winterfell for you. It was just her sitting there going, I am the one person who will take care of you. I swore this to your mother. Your mother's dead. There's nothing holding me to this oath, but I still want to take care of you. So I think that's the difference between the dynamics of Sansa's relationship with Brienne, like how much she trusts her because she knows that Brienne's not there just because of who she is. She's been there when she's been nothing, and she's still there now, and she's supporting her the entire time. Whereas with
the behest of her dead mother.
Whereas with Dany, it's always been like, I think Dany, as much as she might be friends with someone, I think she still also, in her own mind, puts herself above them as like, I'm the queen. Yeah. They are my advisor.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
Yes, you're my trusted friend, but you're also my, like, you're technically my
advisor. What friend does she not use? What friend does she not use for something?
Dany, yeah. I think she's, you know, for all of the people who want to get things out of her, being a Targaryen queen, there's not a lot of people she just is friends with who would do something for. Just, I mean, maybe Jorah, she cares about him, but like, there is something more that Jorah wants, and she knows that too. And I think she uses that to her advantage.
I feel a bit sorry for her now that I'm thinking about it. She got no friends that aren't there for.
But the thing is that they've both been through a lot. Both Sansa and Dany have been through a lot, and. But Sansa's intelligence prevails through all of it. She's calculated. She's smart. She trusts the people she knows are worthy of trusting. She will put aside her own personal issues to, you know, to make a decision for the betterment of everybody. If she's deciding, okay, look, we need another warrior, and Jaime is another warrior, and like, yes, I'm sad and mad about what he did to my family and my father, especially. But I have to put that aside right now because of what's going on. Whereas Dany was not ready to put it aside that he killed people she never even knew. She was too young to know her family. And I know that it's horrible that he killed her family or participated in killing her family and her father. But she didn't even know them. Also, there's no personal connection there.
Her father was batshit crazy.
Yeah, her father was crazy and she knows he was crazy.
Do you think that Sansa would be as ready to stand up for Jaime if she knew that he had pushed Bran out the window?
I think if Brienne vouches for him, yes. And I think, I think it makes all the difference.
Sarah?
I think in that moment, I don't think that there's any doubt that Brienne would vouch for him because they had that moment in the Godswood, where Brienne said, you know, you're not the same person who pushed me out the window. And if you hadn't pushed me out the window, you wouldn't be here right now.
Exactly.
Like, That changed everything for everyone. Yeah. It made him doing a really shitty thing made him the best person that he could have been.
As much as Bran is a fucking robot, like, he would definitely stand up for Jaime in that moment. And I feel like Bran knows that Jaime needs to be there for something specific. I don't think Bran can actually see in the future, but it's just...
what is this? Like, his abilities are a bit like, we don't really know exactly what they are. Like, sometimes it seems like he can see into the future and sometimes he's really fucking vague about it. So, is he
like,
just
he
a
can
walking
tell
the, history?
Maybe
he
that's
can tell
why
the
he
past?
Spent so long in the courtyard last week because he gets like a vibe. It's like someone's coming
feels
to see
it
me,
in the waters,
but he can't actually see the moment.
Pinpoint it. But
he's
can
like,
see the
I
past.
Am all, yeah, he's like, I am all of human memory. But that doesn't mean that he's all of human knowledge going forward.
Right.
So maybe that's why he just spends so long chilling out in a courtyard because he has no idea what time Jaime's going to rock up.
I also think Bran may not have full control of his abilities yet. Considering
no
he's
doubt.
Only been like the Three-Eyed Raven for, what, 2 or 3 seasons now? Like, yeah. I feel I like he's still grasping that power.
Yeah, he's still like a 2.5-eyed raven.
Yeah. He's actually just kind of like a raven. He can just fly.
Speaking of Bran, him and Tyrion sat down to have a chat. What fucking happened?
Next scene, we're like, oh, it's Bran and Tyrion again. Nope, they rolled him off into a fucking cupboard somewhere.
And I was really quite excited
now.
About it because I remember saying to you guys while we were watching it, I was like, well, that's great because Tyrion, as we know, is probably the most intelligent person in this show. And if anyone's going to be able to listen to Bran and listen to Bran's knowledge of the histories of men and what and how this has happened in the past and figure out what needs to be done and how to play the next chess piece, it would be Tyrion. So surely,
and where the fuck did he go?
And I like how Tyrion's like, well, you know, we're locked in a castle in the middle of winter and nowhere to go and like blah, 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 blah. Like, let's tell it. And Bran's like, it's a long story. And so he sits down for a long story. Well, not a long story.
30 seconds later.
2 minutes
bye-bye.
Later.
Do you reckon, though, that Bran just, Tyrion sat down and was like, we've got a long time before us. And Bran was like, cool. And then just rolled out.
like do you, backwards.
I think
really slowly.
I think we're assuming. No, we haven't.
No, he just fucking pops up places.
But that's it. He's the 2.5-eyed raven. He's like, he's not actually rolling anywhere. He's just flapping out.
Yeah, who is, and is he like,
definitely not
roll me here and leave me here for a really fucking long time? Yeah. Like,
I think he just rolls himself with his mind. He's like Professor Xavier.
Yes.
Yeah. He just shaves his head bald and he's just like walking around. I was like,
oh, it would be almost as bad as Gendry's haircut.
Don't even start. We're not even going to get onto Gendry's haircut. I feel like we got off topic because we were on Jaime and then sort of got like,
okay, let's
so
go back
involved.
To Jaime.
But I want to talk less about his trial there and more about like his relationship with Brienne. Like we spoke about, I guess, like with Brienne's relationship with with Sansa, and obviously there's sort of the differences there between like love and faith, like with like Sansa and Dany. But like Jaime's trying so hard to connect with Brienne again, and she's sort of keeping him away because we know deep down that she really does, you know, love him or like him or whatever. But then there's that sort of moment out in the field when she's preparing everyone. We get to see Pod like flop his massive weenie, and like there's that bit where she fully expects Jamie to like roast her,
yeah,
and he just won't because like it's kind of like that point where
I think she just doesn't. I think she's not used to. Okay, so I
men
think
being nice to her,
yes,
at all,
men
ever.
Being nice to her without having some ulterior motive where they then make fun of her. So I think that's why she's keeping him at arm's length. I think they both know that there's a very real connection there, and I think that if they manage to get together, they could be very, very happy together, and they could be like the most solid couple.
Well, what about Tormund?
No.
What about Tormund? With his
Tormund can go
giant
suckle
tits
at a giant's
story.
Teeth. But I think that Jaime and Brienne, like they. Their whole relationship was just constantly ribbing each other, even when they trusted each other. Mm. And having to kind of confront that when they don't know where it's going to go, when Brienne is very aware that he has been fucking his sister all his life. And I think he said at one point to her, like, I'm probably the most loyal man. The only woman I've ever been with is Cersei. And so Brienne's very aware of that weirdness. And she's aware that that's all he's ever experienced. I think Brienne is still a virgin, so it's and she has spent so long thinking that no man could ever love her because she's Brienne the Beauty and all that sort of stuff. And so I think there's just that moment there where, like, it's something deeper than just a sexual attraction. Mm. They feel like they need to connect first, and I think we need to see them connecting properly. And I think that's what that scene was with the knighting of Brienne. That was...
It
that
was him the, understanding yeah. the one thing that she'd wanted more than anything else yeah. without necessarily being told. Like,
yeah, exactly.
She was like, no, 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 it's fine, it's fine. He's like, no, no, you want this.
Yeah.
Like, let me give this to you. I can do this for you.
Yeah, exactly. And I think
it's a respect.
Yeah.
And their whole relationship at the start with them, you know, ribbing each other, it's like that schoolyard thing where you fucking make fun of somebody and pull on their pigtails, and then as soon as you're nice to them, you're like, why? What's happening? Why are you waving next to me?
Yeah.
Leave me alone. Fuck off.
So I don't think that we're ever going to see, like, if they both live through the battle, I don't actually think that we would see Brienne and Jaime have sex on screen at any stage.
No,
I think the closest we would come would be, like, a kiss and probably a very chaste kiss, because I think there's still a lot that their relationship has to go through.
Yeah.
Because Jamie needs to unlearn a lot of things and Brienne needs to unlearn a lot of things, and they need to kind of come together. And I think that's why their relationship is so interesting to watch, because it's not just like so many other relationships on the show. Even Grey Worm and Missandei, like, their relationship definitely has even their relationship has a definite physical aspect to it, whereas these two, I think, is probably they probably have the most in-depth relationship that couldn't just be brought together by having sex with someone.
Yeah, it's this complicated, you know, mutual respect that they have for each other's abilities. Like, I don't think, obviously, Jamie's never met a woman who would have been able to match him in battle pre-amputation. And I think he's been quite humbled by the fact that now he's willing to serve under her because he recognises her talent. And I think that their relationship throughout the season has been, as I said, so integral to making him the person who he is. I don't think he would have even tried to be half the man that he is now had he not come into contact with Brienne.
Yeah. I mean, do you really think Jamie's going to be able to get within 10 feet of Brienne without Tormund absolutely ripping his fucking face look, off?
Tormund's going to have to fucking
Did you see how he walked into that room? He looks at both of them and then pulls up his seat.
What the fuck is going on
and
here,
and then tells
bitches?
The giant story.
I've sucked like, giant tits, so like, Christ, clearly I win.
Yeah, I know.
The whole sequence was fucking hilarious.
It was.
Like
fucking dribbling of the drink that never fucking ended.
Fucking filth.
It was, but I think it's also just an example of like, I think it's just an example of how Brienne could be treated like by somebody who Tormund obviously is attracted to her physically. He doesn't know anything about her. And the difference between like Tormund, still when Jaime knighted Brienne, was super supportive, was clapping, was excited for her and all that sort of stuff. But just the way that he approached her just showed that he had absolutely no idea the complex person that he was dealing with. And I liked
that. He made it a pissing contest.
Yeah,
and
I liked that.
She's not impressed by pissing contests.
Yeah, and I liked that Jaime didn't actually rise to that occasion. It wasn't like, I need to impress Brienne and like show how much better I am than this guy. He was comfortable, well, not comfortable. No one was comfortable with that giant, that giant story. But I think Jaime was just fine sitting there next to Brienne and just watching it happen rather than trying to go like, oh, you know, I've done this. No one else has sucked giant's teats for 3 months, but you know, he's got his own stuff.
Can we now move on to talk about John telling Danny that he is Amelia Mignonette Thermopolis Rinaldi, Princess of Genovia?
Well, what's your reaction as a longtime fan of the books and the show?
Oh, I've been waiting for this for so long.
I forgot that he'd been told last season until he was fucking cold as ice to Danny in one particular scene. I was like, oh, fuck, that's right. He knows he's banging his aunt now. Mm, like,
yeah,
also
yeah.
That he's got a more legitimate claim to the throne than she does.
Yeah.
I also think we've been treated to how the show tells its information. It tells its information very slowly, but this season has been accelerated
very
so
fast
that
God.
We were all I was genuinely surprised when Sam like straight up went to John and goes, yo, you're a Targaryen motherfucker.
Yeah, and I was surprised when it happened again this episode.
Yeah.
Especially when she starts like shitting on his dad and then I was like, uh-oh, he's not going to say anything now because he's just embarrassed. And he's like, actually, bitch, that's not what happened.
Is this really that smart to reveal something destabilizing right before a massive fucking battle?
You know what I find really interesting? This I don't think this ever came up on the show, but in the books there was another Targaryen as well. So there was, apparently another Targaryen. He wasn't in the show, was he?
No, he's not.
That character never happened in the show. So there was who was the guy that took care of him? Biff, whatever his name is. I can't remember his name. Anyway, there was a Targaryen who Dany met before she came over to the Seven Kingdoms, before she crossed the sea and whatever.
Did she meet him?
Yes, she did.
Okay.
Yes, she did. He had blue hair, and they were dyeing his hair blue to make sure. Yeah, it was Griff.
Yeah, Varys was looking after him.
Yes, that's right. Yes. And I was like, Biff? No.
That's Back to the Future.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, so like there was another Targaryen. And the reason Dany was supposed to meet him, and she was very well aware of his existence, he was as they thought, the last surviving male heir of the Targaryen family. And she thought, okay, well, I need to marry this person because that's going to solidify our claim together as Targaryens. And she knew she was related to him, but she knew, again, it's her family's tradition to keep it all in the family. And she never reacted badly to that, from what I recall. She was okay with it, accepting of it, and was like, yeah, look, I do what I need to do in order to make sure that I'm still queen and that together we rule as Targaryens. Because the Targaryen sigil is the three-headed dragon, right? So it's almost always been the concept of, like, several Targaryens ruling together. So she was shocked, yes, and she seems a bit disbelieving that... And I think she's probably gotten used to that idea that she's the only one left. Mm. But it's really hard to know because in the books she never seemed against it because she thought it played into the three-headed dragon, the three heads of the dragon
but
analogy.
But has she spent... Like, how early on did that happen in the books? Because has she spent so long now?
No, it was quite late in the books. But the books were, like, you know... finished off when Jon Snow died.
Yeah, so I'm wondering whether she's spent so long now believing that she's the one. Yeah, because we're well past knock her down a the peg end. Would make her a bit.
Yeah, wounded. Exactly. Yeah, that was way early on in like in the story as we know it now with all the TV like series as well. But like, yeah, I wonder if she seemed a bit sus about it, but I wonder if she might come around to the idea because she always did believe in the Targaryen three-headed dragon. Like thing, I don't think she ever wanted to be alone. To be honest, I think she hated Viserys. But
yeah, I think it's really interesting that they're like all of a sudden go straight to oh god, claim on the Iron Throne rather than oh god, I'm banging my nephew.
Yeah, I know.
Like that's, there's no
yeah.
Like is that's that all okay she's
cared.
Westeros,
that's all she's or? Cared about for so long though. And in the Targaryen line, they all bang their family. So yeah. I don't think it's a big deal to her because she always thought she was supposed to marry her brother. She thought she was supposed to marry Viserys before she drowned him in fucking gold or whatever.
Viserys was a dick.
He was a dick.
Fuck that idiot. I am really, like, I'm in the same line as you, Liz, when it comes to, like, I get that telling Dany, like, it's important, but, like, telling her on the eve of...
Right before the biggest fucking yeah, that was inconsiderate. Of their lives. Like, she's going into battle with a cortisol flood happening at the moment. I don't think that's right. I don't think that's going to help anybody. Like,
do you think she's accidentally going to, like, slip and, like, set him on fire with one of her dragons?
Yeah, whoops. Woo!
Oh, damn.
No more Targaryen.
Lost Targaryen.
You really... Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Not the, like, fucking your nephew
you know,
thing.
Cause...
No, not the fucking my nephew thing, you know. Just the
hey, you know the most busiest time of your life? Let's choose that moment.
Not at the show.
Yeah. We've never experienced that before.
Yeah. You guys are lying. Anyway. But, yeah, it didn't make too much sense to me just, like, on the eve of, like... do you have an idea of what as to why?
I think John is just a little bitch. Like, remember last season in the Dragon Pit where Cersei was like, I want the king in the north to bend the knee to me. Yeah. And he was like, look, I can't do it. And everyone was like, can you learn to lie? And he's like, no, I can't do it. I think I don't think it was necessarily like he just can't keep a secret.
Yeah.
He just can't do it. He can't withhold that information because he feels like it's impacting on his honor. Especially yeah. because, like, as Emma said, like, Daenerys grew up thinking she was going to marry her brother. So I don't think she's too weird. She would be too weirded out by the fact that she's been banging her nephew.
Yep.
Just because of the way that her family was. But John's a Targaryen by birth, but he's not a Targaryen in the way that he was raised. So he's not going to sit there and go like, yeah, that's fine. He would have been so weirded out by it and it would have been like...
Eating at him?
I think the moment that he... Because he was kind of like holding off. He was being very quiet. And then she kind of like tucked her arms through his.
Yeah.
And when it was like that physical contact, that was when he kind of like was like, no.
It's like I have to do this.
Yeah, but it's hard to know whether people in this world term that as particularly bad incest. Because if you're talking about the part of history that this is referring to the War of the Roses, there were a lot of people who married their cousins, their uncles, their nieces.
God damn, like
aunts.
Even when you get into Oscar Wilde, the importance of being earnest, they find out their cousins, like Gwendolyn and John find out their cousins right at the end and they're still like, let's get married.
I mean, even the current Queen Elizabeth is married to her cousin. So like it is not unusual in royal families for this to happen. So whether he's feeling uncomfortable because of the family relation, I actually don't think that's what it is, because I think they're far enough away that it wouldn't actually be termed incest. If it's just he's uncomfortable that he gave away his throne before he realized he was.
Well, he doesn't want to be treasonous at the same time. Like, he was talking to Sam when Sam was telling him everything, and he was like, well, that's treason. And also at the same time, like, you've got this relationship between the two of them that's already been established. And I think that, it's very destabilizing to the two of them. And I think that he probably doesn't really know what he wants. He just kind of needed to – not to mention the fact that she burned Sam's family. She burned his best friend's family, and that could have set a seed of doubt into his head in terms of the other Targaryen went mad. What if she's also – what if, you know?
Do you buy into that theory of the man? I'll ask you, Sarah, but do you sort of buy into the theory that the episode kind of maybe signposted that Dany could go mad?
I definitely think it did, because there was a lot of times where she was saying stuff and I was like, girl, calm down.
Yeah.
Like, just about to throw Tyrion off. Like, I think she's more concerned about looking bad and making mistakes than she is about necessarily being a good ruler now.
She seems a bit panicky. She seems a bit panicky and reactive to everything that's happening. It's like she feels that her grasp of power is not quite as tight as it was when she was ruling over entire slave populations.
Yeah, and I think that's what it is. Like, she's always used
to... Now she's with big players, not little players.
And she's with other people who have, like, dynasties behind them, and they have like long family lines. They have their own history. They're not coming from nothing. So it's not like she can sit there and go, my family did this and they ruled for 300 years. And everyone's like, you know what? My family's been up here in the north for 1,000 years. So you can just back off. Like, she's no longer got that moment where she can just kind of lord that over people. And I think
she can't be like the you know, magnanimous queen in front of people who also have status.
Yeah, and I think that's making her very unsteady, because it's not just about, like, yes, people are saying, oh, she's my queen and all that sort of stuff, but they're also questioning her on things that no one, none of her other subjects would have been able to do.
But I also think that, like, give her some credit. When Jorah came in and said, look, he's intelligent, he's really smart, you need him, blah, 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 blah. Like, he talked her off the ledge, and she, after that point, said to Tyrion, look, I don't want you in the battle. I want you safe, because I value your intelligence and I'm going to need you after this.
Unfortunately, like, her version of safe is in the crypts, and they've signposted us to be like, bah-bah.
But maybe that's a blessing in disguise, because we know Tyrion, he can actually fight. Yeah. That's why he was saying, I can go out and fight. I'm actually good at this.
Yeah.
And she's like, no, but I need your brain. So maybe it's a good thing that he's going to be down there, because A, his brain, he might be able to help them out of there. And B, he can fight. He might be able to help them fight.
But like, shit, if they lose that brain and he becomes a fucking white.
Yes, but he can't. He's, you know, he's not going to, like, I doubt that... The whites need brains. Do you know what I mean? Like, I don't think that that's a thing that that they'd value in any particular way.
Well, so, would they not want to maybe destroy people who had them?
But their sort of intelligence is like thousands of years old. It's not like strategic intelligence. Yeah, it's aged intelligence, and they're death. You know, like it's a different sort of take on intelligence.
I was going to say their sentience is probably, like, more controlled by how calculating the Night King is. The thing is, though, is, like, you look at the Night King and, like, you know, the four fucking apostles or whatever the fuck they are.
Yeah, what is that? Like, that's some Lord of the Rings bullshit. Well, yeah, the Nine Kings or whatever.
But you look at that and go, we don't know how calculating the Night King is yet. The only thing we've seen is just obviously the shit that they've left. Like,
we
the spirals
also don't know who he is.
No.
And I think that that's a really... I really hope that there is something behind that. You know, like, I don't want him to be another fucking Star Wars villain that's just a villain for the sake of being a villain. What's his name? Snoke. fucking just evil for the sake of being evil. Yeah. Like, I don't think anyone in Game of Thrones is like that. There's stories, backstories upon backstories upon backstories. And I feel like there is a backstory to the Night King. We'll find out whether he is Bran, which is what everyone's theorizing. I think
it's a stupid theory, but anyway.
I think it's a stupid theory, but I think Bran is probably the Bran in all the histories. I think he's probably walked into the different brands for whatever reason. Walked into the old brand to help him build the wall, to keep the whites out, blah, blah, blah. But, like, I don't know who this Night King is and how he came to be. And everyone just keeps saying he's death. And I'm like, I don't know.
I feel like the storyline that I have the least grasp on is all of the First Men, like, yes. stuff. So I feel yes. like it's going to come back into play in a massive way, and there's going to be a lot of people going, what way? And I feel like I almost want to go back and do a rewatch of every time they've talked about, like, the Children of the Forest and the First Men.
Because well, they, like, made, that's they be made him the Night King, right? The Children yeah. of the Forest made the Night King by putting Dragonglass
in. Yeah, yeah. Right? I know that, but, like...
But who is he? Who was he?
Who he was and yeah, what?
Like, what? Why did they do that to him? And who was he? I think that's a question that still hasn't been answered. The fact of the matter is, he was a man, and he did have some sort of relationship to the Children of the Forest and the First Men, and we've got to find out what that relationship was to know what his motivations might be.
Yeah, absolutely.
He can't just be after Bran for the sake of being after Bran, and yeah, he can't just like, want an endless night for the sake of wanting an endless night, because then that does make him fucking Snoke.
Shitty, boring.
So boring, like, yeah. just wants to have evil things happen because he's evil.
Yeah. yeah, no, he needs to have some sort of purpose, and what the purpose was in marking Bran and why he want, you know. Like, yeah. I mean, obviously they said they want to destroy the memory of men, so they, you know, wipe out all memory of men, but, like, it's not enough for me. I need more.
I don't know if you've already covered this when I stepped out, but has Bran told anyone else how they were made?
I don't think so.
I don't think so.
Like, he should start telling people so that other people know.
But, like, he should start telling people a lot of shit.
Yeah, he should. But, like, is that the reason the Night King's like, I want to wipe out all memory? Because there's only one person technically right now who knows how the White Walkers were made and how they can be destroyed. Bran's the only person, apart from Mira, who has come in contact with the Three-Eyed Raven, the Children of the Forest.
Where is Mira?
Oh, she fucked off. Bran said, see you later.
Yeah.
She was like, I want to go back to my family. And he's like, all right. And she goes, you don't need me anymore. I was like, no, I really don't.
Yeah.
It was one of his first fucking heartless things that he did that was very non-human. And
but, like, is that the only reason? Because if that is the only reason that Bran's the only one who knows firsthand how they were created and how and why they can be destroyed in a certain way, then he should, like, everyone knows they can be killed by Dragonglass and Valyrian steel at this point, but do they know why? Like, if everyone dies, there's no one there to come back years later from Essos and be like, I know exactly. Like, send fucking ravens. I don't know if ravens can cross the narrow sea.
You figured it out. You can kill them with Dragonglass.
Yeah, but he doesn't know how they were created.
Yeah, and everyone knows now that when you kill a particular White Walker, then the whites that he created died. And so I think they have a kind of a grasp with the fact that they're trying to go for the Night King for the same effect.
But, like, that was because I was just finished my series rewatch, and I found it kind of weird. I don't actually remember, I'm willing to stand corrected, but I don't remember anyone actually telling, like, the bloody Wall Avengers or whatever the term is for those people who went and brought back the white. I don't remember any of them saying the Night King created all of them. I don't remember anyone giving them that knowledge, but then all of a sudden they were standing there in the middle of that frozen lake thing and going, like, he's the one that we need. We need to kill him. And I'm like, well, obviously he's got, like, a little crown thing going on, but that doesn't mean that he's the only one who was created at the same time.
He's just a fabulous White Walker. He might not even be the king, you don't know.
The only thing I can think of which would, I don't know if that's just speaking to, like, some supreme intelligence, but when at Hardhome, when they see all of them, like, rise, when the Night King makes them rise, like, I think maybe the assumption there off that is that he's creating them.
I
don't know if I'm looking into that a little too much.
Yeah, John did see him.
He did see him do that, but he didn't see anyone else. Like, he didn't see anyone not do that. He doesn't know that none of the other White Walkers have that power.
Night King was giving him some pretty fucking evil side eye at that point. Yeah. So maybe he's like, oh, that guy looks like he's in charge and he won't stop staring at me.
Yeah, but, like, any of them could have been it.
Bran, they're There's a lot of looking going on.
There's a lot of fucking creepy staring. Probably a lot of stalkerish kind of behavior.
They should buy shares in a fucking eye drops
company. Yeah.
now all Bran needs is a weird sinewy horse.
Yeah. Yeah. But I don't think it's been explicitly said.
No, not to those specific people. Like, no. Bran, once again, Bran knows that he was the first White Walker that was created. Yeah. But at that stage, Bran had not come in contact with John or any of those people.
Yeah.
So none of, like, they know, they call him the Night King, but he could be the second in charge. They don't know. There could be someone that they don't even know about for...
I think I'll find that out.
Yeah. Who's referred to him as the Night King?
John.
So why did he? Where did he get that name from?
His weird Darth Maul crown.
Right.
I don't... See, this like is who, the thing.
Did Children of the Forest call him that and then Bran's passed that term
on? Or? No, because... But John didn't see Bran until this season.
Yeah.
See, this is what I was just saying before when you left the room, is that this is the part of the whole universe that I feel like I am not up on. Like, I feel like I don't really understand enough of the Children of the Forest First Men story to be able to kind of figure any of this shit out.
It's also not a story we've seen. You know, it's like we've watched everything else unfold with the characters we know, but this is all stuff from legends. And like George Martin's written like a big, massive fuck off encyclopedia, like a World of Ice and Fire, that has like all of these legends, the old school Valyria and Children of like First Men and all that, all those stories. And I'm sure there's something in there that'll hint towards what's about to happen, like that something's about to replay, like, you know, Azor Ahai and Nissa Nissa and everything else. Like
the first time I watched that, I was like, oh, this story's boring me, get back to the real stuff. But now as it's becoming more important, I'm like, oh, fuck, should have paid attention.
Yeah. Well, you know that, like, you've heard the, like, Azor Ahai story. Yeah. I think there's a lot of people convinced that that's going to replay itself because the sword needs to come back. Like, someone needs to have the sword, someone needs to have Lightbringer, someone needs to be the one that chases the knight off, whatever. And some people think it's Danny, and some people think it's John, and some people think Lightbringer's already here because what's his face? Beric Dondarrion has it. Some people think they don't. And, like, although I have to say, like, there's more and more emphasis on the swords, the named swords.
Yes,
the Valyrian
and the
steel
passing
swords,
of different swords to different people. Houses.
And I think there's more than, there's got to be more than like sentimentality involved there.
Yeah, because
like,
this episode we saw Sam give the Tarly family sword
back
to
Jorah
because Jorah's family sword is with Jon.
Yeah. I think It will matter soon, like who has the Valyrian steel swords and what they are and why they're named after certain old houses as well. Because some of these families have been around for a very long time. The ones with the Valyrian steel swords are old houses.
Brienne has Oathkeeper still, right?
Yes.
Yeah, because Oathkeeper's Valyrian steel, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And Arya still has Cat's Paw, which is Valyrian steel as well, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whose sword was that?
It was originally Peter Baelish had it and gave it to the assassin to kill Bran.
That's right.
Which then found its way back to Arya.
Yeah. So there's a few. They all belonged, I thought, to old school houses. Or, in the case of like Ned Stark's sword, was melted down and turned into another sword. Mm. And
yeah, the thing about that is like, there's only very specific. To create a Valyrian steel sword, there's only certain people who can do it. And I think when ice was melted down to create Oathkeeper and fucking Widow's Wail or whatever the fuck it was, there are people who can remake Valyrian steel swords, but they cannot create new Valyrian steel swords.
Yeah.
And that art was lost a long time ago, and this is like part of the history. It was lost a long time ago, and they're called Valyrian steel swords because they were created in Valyria. So when Valyria fell and was like all melted and whatever the hell happened to it before it became like a desert retreat for the grayscale people. So there was only certain people who could make it and they were all in Valyria. So since Valyria died, that's why there's only certain things because that happened a long time ago.
Oh, Cat's Paw was Tyrion's. That's why Peter Baelish used
it.
It
was
Tyrion. Sorry.
It was Tyrion's and then Baelish won it in some game of cards or something.
And then used it to frame Tyrion for trying to kill Bran.
Where did Tyrion get it from?
Do we know?
I don't know. Maybe it was just his.
I think that the Valyrian steel is what, like, they were forged in Valyria, which is, you know, the city of fire and the dragons and everything else. When you talk about Lightbringer and how it's supposed to be a sword that lights up and all, like, I really do think that there's something to do with all these Valyrian steel swords.
Not to mention that in the previous season when they were looking through, when Sam was looking through all these books, there was a diagram of Cat's Paw in one of his significant books.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. I didn't remember that.
Yeah.
Wow. No idea that was a thing. Holy shit.
Yeah. If you have a look, there's like people who have paused on it, and when he's looking at something about Dragonglass, there's a picture of Cat's Paw on the left-hand side page.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, 100% the Valyrian steel will kill the White Walkers. Like, we know that. We know the Valyrian steel will, and we know that the Dragonglass will, and that's why everyone's trying to get these weapons made.
Mm.
But I just think there's more to the actual named swords. I think there's reasons they've been named, and there's reasons they've existed for so long.
I think... From memory, I think all of the Valyrian steel swords, before it became the Seven Kingdoms, there were separate houses. There was, like, different kings. So there was, like, king in the north, king of the... They didn't call it the Stormlands. It was, like, king of the Westerlands or something like that. And all of those people, I'm pretty sure, had Valyrian steel for some reason. Like, they just, I don't know, signed up and... shared shipping costs or something over from Valyria. But they all had Valyrian steel swords, and I'm not surprised at Cat's Paw, because while it is Valyrian steel, it is much smaller.
The dagger.
So I would not be surprised if Tyrion, it was either in the family or if Tyrion had enough money to purchase that because he was a Lannister and was like, it's Valyrian steel.
Mm.
I can have it if I want to. I'm going to pay an exorbitant price for that. I don't think we've known how that came into Tyrion's possession beforehand, but I'm pretty sure he was just arrogant. Or that's the story that Littlefinger gave anyway. He could have done something else. He was a slimy git.
I want to wrap it up because I want to get...
One more thing, though. I'm sorry, but, like, can we just talk about Theon and Sansa briefly? Because having him show up and not knowing how anyone was going to react because he thanks, birds. they're all about it.
Yeah.
The fact that he took Winterfell from the Starks, but he also saved Sansa from being tortured by Ramsay. The moment when she teared up and ran to him, my heart... I've always had a soft spot for Theon. Everyone's like, oh, he's a fucking dick. No, like, he just made a couple of really shitty decisions and has been coping with those decisions ever
since. He's paid hard for those decisions.
And all he wanted to do was make his daddy proud,
and
it didn't work out well for him.
It's not all that different to Tyrion's story, really. It's just that Tyrion has, like, a great sense of sarcasm, so everyone forgives him for shit.
Exactly.
But he did some dick things, too.
Absolutely. You know? Everyone's done dick things, but, like, he's done no dick things now. Yeah. But
which means no Sansa and Theon babies, everybody.
Well, look, can I just say, though, when they were going right at the end and Pod was singing and they were panning across all the couples, Theon and Sansa were in there looking at each other kind of like, what was that about?
Missandei and Grey Worm 2.0.
Yeah, like, it was an interesting choice to go... To take shots of all the loved up couples and then include a shot of those two in there, I thought.
I did actually completely forget about that because Theon's such a forgettable character and so are the Greyjoys.
How dare you? Well, how dare you? Theon, every time.
Fucking Iron Islands.
The Iron Islands are jerks.
But the, like, Iron Islands in the books, I still maintain to this day that a good portion of the Iron Islands in the books could have met with Control Z and we would have all been better off for it.
Oh, see, look,
he had so many uncles that had point of view chapters. It was insane.
I came into Game of Thrones TV show quite late because I was dating a jerk who was like, no, we're not watching it until I finish the books, you dick. But when I did, I was binging through a lot of it at a time and I was going, oh, I kept every week, I was like, is something bad going to happen to Theon? And my ex was like, oh, Liz, oh, you sweet summer child. Yeah. But like, I every time he comes on, I'm just like, oh, please just redeem yourself. Like, you need to, oh, I love him a little bit. I really do. Do you want them to get together? Well, I don't understand why they would include that shot if there wasn't...
I think there's a bit of love there, and I think the two of them have gone through a lot together, more so than Sansa's been through with... Like, you know,
she was with Arya at the beginning, right? Yeah. And but they split before either of them did much growing.
Yeah.
And then she didn't see her brothers for years. She only just really reconnected with Jon recently.
Yeah.
And I think... Theon was with her during a really rough period.
The roughest period.
And he was her only hope during that period. And I think, like, that meant a lot to her at that time, that when she was at her weakest, that he was there, and that even to his own detriment, he was still trying to help her like that. And she speaks a lot about how what family means to her. And I think Theon is still family to her to some degree, you know. And I think it just means a lot for her to have, even if she does have feelings for him, he essentially grew up with her brothers, with Rob and her dad. He was raised by Ned, just like her, like John and Rob were. And I think, you know, to have a good majority of the people she grew up around her in Winterfell for this battle, like knowing that they're about to go to war and one of her family has come home again, must just be like overwhelmingly like wonderful for her to, you know, especially him, to at least be able to say goodbye, I think, you know, before all of this happens, if it does happen, whatever the fuck's going
to
happen.
Well, he basically just says he's going to guard Bran at the Godswood when it comes to the final showdown.
Yeah.
So.
Oof, that's not going to go down well, I don't feel.
Yeah, what the fuck's Theon going
to
do?
He's going to need
to tremble.
It's just, well, I think he's gotten better. Like, he fucking shot some dude through the eye last episode.
He's still just like, so meek.
He's getting there, and I think this needs to be, I think this is going to be his final redemptive arc. He's going to die in a blaze of redemptive glory, I reckon.
Do you think it's going to be a blaze of glory, though? I kind of feel like he's going to be
a headbutt of glory.
I feel like he's going to be killed very easily, because I think Theon has always been very good with a bow and arrow, and we've always seen that, because I think that we saw that when Bran was initially Osha and her mates from beyond the wall were trying to kidnap Bran. I think we've always seen Theon as a good archer, but I don't think he's a very good swords person.
I think whatever he does and however he goes, it's going to be throwing his life on the line for someone else.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. He's going to die.
Yeah, but for somebody else, not just as a casualty of war. Yes. It's going to be some kind of big, heartwarming, bittersweet, protective act.
Yeah.
And I think it would be poetic if he died for Bran, given that he was the one that almost killed Bran and Rickon.
Yeah.
And I, it's also nice that I think Bran was near the Godswood when Theon saved him the first time. So there is a kind of like nice symmetry to that. I don't feel like Theon is going to do much, though. I just, like, in my heart, I feel like Theon's going
to
try.
I want his death to mean something.
I feel like his death will mean something, and I feel like he's going to try, but it's going to be, like, one of those moments where, like, that person swoops in and they're like, I'm going to take on the baddie, and they, like, start swinging their sword, and the person just, like, grabs them by the throat and throws them to the side. I don't think it's going to, based on...
What can Theon do?
Yeah.
I feel
like he's just gonna.
I want it so bad. Stop shitting on my parade.
I know you want it, but I just feel like based on Theon and how every battle has gone for him, he's just going to be the guy who gets like his neck snapped.
I don't think I've heard such a staunch defense of Theon Greyjoy.
I don't know what it is. I don't know what it is, and I don't know whether it's literally just because I watched everything in one go and I just kept
feeling
so bad.
You know what you should do? You read the books.
No,
babe. Read the books. You'll hate him and his entire family.
I like Theon and I just feel shitty. I was like, you can see the moment that it happens, because I've just done a rewatch of seasons 1 to 3, and he makes the decision to side with his dad because he's so desperate for approval, and then everything goes to shit. Like, he has to just keep committing to his decision over and over again, and it's just going so poorly for him, and my heart fucking breaks for him, man. I will defend him till the day he dies, which may be next week.
Yes.
It's probably
going to be next week. I have a feeling that he'll need to die, because we'll need to see engagement of the Night King and Bran. And I think that there'll be some sort of like brain thing that happens between them, like Voldemort and Harry with the wands, you know, I reckon they'll just fucking stare at each other for like a good few hours.
They'll both sit in the courtyard.
Sit in the courtyard and look at each other. But like, you'll see a lot of like past legends. So we might see bits from like the First Men, the Children of the Forest, even Valyria, just not like way far back, because he talks about how he's got the memory of men.
Yeah.
But I have a feeling the Night King might have more, and like between the two of them, we might get like a full history of you know, what's happened in the past and led everyone to this moment. Yeah, exactly. Because a lot of staring.
Finally, like ponying up on the whole, every episode's going to be movie length, because the last two have not been.
No. Yeah, here we go. Fucking, strap in, kids.
They fucking lied. So to wrap it up, how are you feeling? We'll start with you. Yeah. How are you feeling overall? We're two episodes in. General, just the general Game of Thrones.
It's moved nice and fast. I've had many emotional moments. Definitely cried when Arya and Jon reunited the other episode. Got a bit teary about the knighting of Brienne today. And also, like, Sansa hugging Theon was really heartwarming.
Both of those, I had one single tear from Theon. Each fucking night.
Should have given you the mic.
Shut up.
So, I think there's been some really heartwarming moments, actually, that are really nice because they're so few and far between in Game of Thrones. And I think especially now, although I also just feel like it's classic Game of Thrones, like lulling you into a false sense of security because before they kill everybody.
They had to give everybody a happy moment in this episode so that it makes what's coming next.
Oh, I can just imagine George Martin with the writers just like sitting there going every time he reunites people and he's like,
yeah, he's like, here's your happy moment. Here's making their relationship so much stronger so they've got more to fucking lose when they die.
It's like, how funny would it be if we made Arya have sex with Gendry and then kill them both?
Well, in horror movies, once you have sex, you gotta die. Yeah, like exactly. It's the rules.
There you go.
Sorry, Sarah, but that's it. That's it.
Sarah's ugly crying in the corner now.
So, Sarah, how are you feeling with the two episodes we've seen so far?
Anticipation.
I feel like really wired. Like, yes, these episodes. I know that I'm going to go into work because, like, after last week, I went into work on the Tuesday and everyone was like, that episode was so slow and nothing happened. And I was like,
a buttload of stuff good. Happened. No one died, but a buttload of stuff happened.
Yeah, I was making the case hard for every reunion that happened. And I feel like the same thing is going to happen to a lot of people where they're going to be like, you know, this is nothing much happened in this one. There was a lot of like relationships and all that sort of stuff. But I think that's so important because we need to remember what we want, like why we want these people to win.
Battles not mean just, nothing if we don't know the people
exactly.
Fighting them.
We need to remember, like, good versus evil, fine, we get that. But you need to remember why you want these people to survive. And I think that they did a really good job of showing everyone that and showing why we want, what kind of future we want to see these people having. And I think that was very important. So I'm like wired because we got a glimpse of everyone's little futures. And I'm like so prepared for everyone to die, but I'm not prepared at all. And I just, yeah, I'm just feeling very like.
I think he's going to kill next episode.
I feel like my skeleton's going to leave my body. Top three people who are going to die. Theon is definitely going to die. I'm sorry, Liz. Theon's going to die. Who else? The little girl who went down into the crypts.
Davos.
If Lyanna Mormont dies, I'm fucking rioting.
You know she will.
I'm rioting.
But also, I think it's very Schindler's List, the whole, like, marking that girl so she has a very distinguishable face and then they'll kill her so that you see her and you notice her immediately that she's dead and she's a White Walker.
And she'll come up against Davos because it's a reminder of fucking like, Bern Shireen.
Just like the red coat in Schindler's List. Like,
yeah.
So, Theon, little girl, who else is going to die?
Grey Worm and Missandei. Oh yeah, great. Buy it soon, don't
one
they?
Of them is one of them is totally going to die. If not,
yeah, they're
both
done.
Of them.
They're done for sure. Liz, how are you feeling with the last two episodes?
I'm fucking stressed, everybody. I was stressed halfway through, basically. Like, I know that there's only one reason that they're giving us all these happy, teary moments, and it's to rip them away from us. Like, there's no other reason why writers give you nice things but to take
them
away.
Yeah, one of you guys said false sense of security. I am not secure.
No, I'm not secure because
I'm secure. I distrust them more.
Yeah, exactly. Like, giving us all these heartwarming moments is just a way to crush our spirits next episode. Sadly, also think Theon's probably going to bite it next episode. As long as it's a redemptive death, I'm kind of okay with that. But if he dies,
what if he just like trips into a White Walker?
What? No, if he trips into a White Walker or shakes, I'll cry.
Theon, like, fucking shaking in his boots.
I just don't understand why you have to like every time Theon's brought up, he seems to have a fit. Like has he got epilepsy?
PTSD. He's got fucking PTSD. Like he just freezes
he's
up.
He's tensing up. He's waiting for someone to cut off another appendage. I sympathize with him for that, but he does get quite twitchy.
So we've got, what, four episodes left? So I'm not thinking that they're going to go in hard with the deaths in the next episode. I think it's going to take a little bit of time, but we're going to lose a couple of people who we thought were key players who probably aren't.
Are you sure? Or are we going to go Infinity War on this one and like half of them get
wiped?
We'll
just fucking snap our fingers and all the bitches
die.
They're
going to do a Sept of Baelor.
Yeah. Well, like, other, like I'm
no more budget. We've wasted it all on CGI. We cannot afford to pay these actors.
Yeah, because Ghost appeared for like 2 seconds in this episode. We can't fucking...
And now we're ruined.
Yeah. I think the thing for me is that what are they going to do for the other three episodes if they kill off too many people in the next one? I think people are waiting for the deaths because they're like, come on, this is final season. But... I mean, Theon will probably go. Grey Worm and Missandei have got to be, one of them's got to be the first to go. I don't fucking know who else, but it's stressing me out.
To take a panorama of us.
And our faces are stretched and fucked up.
you should see this photo. M looks like Theon when he's having a fit. All right, I think that'll do us for this week. Did you want to shout out your podcast, Liz?
Oh, yeah. I have my own podcast called Castology. You can find it on iTunes. It's a podcast that reviews other podcasts. So if you all want to know what podcast you should listen to me because I know the things.
Also listen to this one.
Yeah, listen to this one.
This one.
Yeah. Because it's fucking important. But yeah, thanks for coming on to the show, guys. As always, you can get us on Apple Podcasts, on Spotify, on Wooshka, all that sort of stuff. Give us some ratings because we've only got 4 episodes left and that's it. I love reminding that of people is that we have like 4 weeks and then nothing else. How fucking sad.
I'm going to wee myself.
Well, just do it on this bed. It's fine. Okay. Yeah, it's fine. I would just type in some
room. Bedspread. Maybe not here. Yeah. Maybe.
And do it on the carpet.
Yeah.
Kitty litter.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool.
You're well hydrated though, so it could be clear.
Yeah.
Yeah, it'd be fine.
We'll see. I drank a lot of apple juice yesterday. Yeah.
Had plenty of asparagus. Anyway, guys, thank you so much for listening. We'll catch you next week.